Yesterday we read these magnificent lines, which toward the end of the Godheads of the Little Life, even in this investiture of fleshly life, a soul that is a spark of God survives. And sometimes it breaks through the sordid screen and kindles a fire that makes us half divine. In our body cells there sits a power that sees the unseen and plans eternity. Our smallest parts have room for deepest needs. There too the golden messengers can come. This is the beauty of Savitri, that throughout, at the end of the night, we always see the light. Savitri starts with the description of the night before the dawn, and it ends with, and in her bosom she nursed a greater dawn. This is the beauty and the of this poem. Even in the thick of darkness, we have cantos where Sri Aurobindo will go deep inside the roots from where all this littleness is coming up. He is not satisfied just by seeing the surfaces of life and looking at its smallness and declaring it as a vanity. He will go into its roots to see where from all this falsehood, this crookedness, this distorted figure and mask is coming up. Probably next time, in next year, we'll be doing that. And then at the end of it, he will still give us hope. And it's not just a song of hope, it is also a song of victory. Because in Savitri, we have ultimately the annihilation of this embodied darkness, this embodied unconsciousness, this embodied falsehood, this death, which is the source of division and original separation. So we continue with these lines. Even in human nature, in its smallness, we have pity, we have sympathy, we have affection, we have tenderness, we have sacrifice. There are moments when even in our littleness, the little screen is parted and the ordinary mortal does extraordinary things. There are so many examples, and one of the recent two things which straight away come to my mind, some stories which were not flashed much. Of course, one of them was flashed, the 26/11, when in Bombay this terrorist came in and he was killing people blindly and mercilessly. At that point of time, there must have been many events, but two which straight away come to mind was that in the hotel where all this started, some of the staff of the hotel, nobody knows their names. Actually, I don't know what their names were, but the story came, it didn't hit the headlines, that they were escorting the trapped guest towards safety. They could have simply run and found a safe corner for themselves. They knew the whole hotel. They had no business to actually escort the guest. They were not going to be given a medal for this work. And something happened, a sense of duty beyond the call of their littleness. They were not paid for this. And surely they also had their family. They were working for basically little earthly interest. And yet, during that moment, they were not courageous commandos who were trained specifically for this task. Ordinary people like us doing extraordinary things. So Sri Aurobindo sees that even sometimes it breaks through the sordid screen. The other story was of this, I think, police constable Omle. Nobody knew his name before. Perhaps he was just, he had joined the job because it's a job which gives him money. And he is the man who was instrumental actually in catching this terrorist, and the way he caught it is really remarkable. One can't imagine that he literally held his gun and put it to his belly, and he kept shooting, but he kept holding this man and kept being dragged by him till finally someone could grab and capture him. He is an ordinary person. His life, his wife, children must be on the verge of probably retiring in a few hours' time, looking forward to a pension. Till now, not awarded for any gallantry or bravery. And yet, during that moment, this man acted as if with a sense of immortality. During that time, his actions were instinct, as Shubhendu says, with a secret sense of immortality. Tales of extraordinary courage in our ordinary humanness. Tales of extraordinary nobility. Nobility, courage, self-giving, sacrifice, sympathy. These are all attributes of the psychic life which breaks through sometimes in human nature. And as we were seeing, even in animal nature, there are some very famous horses and elephants who have been immortalized by the poets because of their exemplary spirit of service and sacrifice. Though of course they don't write, they don't brag about themselves and they don't get medals, and that makes their sacrifice even more wonderful. So Sri Aurobindo is reminding us of this hope. The hope is not because of a mind, the hope is not because of the government, the hope is not because of the policies where we are looking, they are the wrong doors. The hope is because in this investiture of fleshly life, a soul that is a spark of God survives. That little spark struggling against immense darkness is the hope, and it's deathless. So we have these lines on page 170. There too the golden messengers can come in our smallest parts. A door is cut in the mud wall of self. Across the lowly threshold with bowed heads, angels of ecstasy and self-giving pass. In all these moments when human beings extend beyond their little wall of mud self. Otherwise, our average life is busy only with our self-preservation, this mud self. But there are moments when we look beyond this state and lost in an inner sanctuary of dream, the makers of the image of deity live. Pity is there and fire-winged sacrifice and flashes of sympathy and tenderness cast heaven lights from the heart's secluded shrine. These are the gods which emerge from the soul. Savitri will experience them when she is going in search of the soul. She will see these godheads emerging and moving towards the outer nature to help humanity. And she would ask them, tell me, where is my secret soul? And they will point backward that we come from your secret soul. So all these beautiful moments that human beings experience, faith and nobility and courage and tenderness and sympathy, they spring from the soul. And they have to be cherished as God moments. And that's what Sri Aurobindo tells us, few lines below, lulled by time's beats, eternity sleeps in us. And of course, sometimes it wakes up. We read this, and on page 171, Sri Aurobindo gives a still greater hope. Not only is it there in us, not only does it break through the sordid screen in some moments. Page 171, the second line from top, and when that greater self comes sea-like down to fill this image of our transience, all shall be captured by delight, transformed in waves of undreamed ecstasy shall roll. Our mind and life and sense and laugh in a light other than this hard, limited human day. We have so far heard about this self as a passive presence. whenever yogis have spoken of self-realization, it's a inner state where you discover the divine who is there in all things, the divine who is there within, the divine who is on the peaks of our nature, but a divine who is the witness and upholder of this scene. But Sri Aurobindo is bringing another vision of this divine, this self. And when this self is with a greater S, and Sri Aurobindo further qualifies this greater self, and when this greater self comes sea-like down, this is the small self, the self of our ego, the self of our little life, which we think of ourselves. But when this greater self comes tumbling down like a sea, then delight, wisdom, love, strength will become our very nature. So he's telling us, our mind and life and sense and laugh in a light other than this hard, limited human day. We have very limited capacities even to laugh. Very soon, children start with a smile, and of course they then start laughing. Of course, in this beautiful school, they laugh right up to knowledge. But in many schools outside, they are burdened with care so soon that they begin to forget their laughter. Then they start into a job, they begin to lose their laughter. And after some time, they look dead serious. Even when they turn to spiritual life, they become more and more grave. Which should be the other way around. The divine touch of the divine lends so much delight. So this is the human life. Sri Aurobindo is saying, when that greater self comes tumbling down, our mind and life and sense and laugh in a light other than this hard, limited human day. The body's tissues thrill apotheosized. Its cells sustain bright metamorphosis. It's by that descent that our very body cells will undergo a metamorphosis. They will change from this death-bound littleness. Elsewhere, Sri Aurobindo will tell us, this death-bound littleness is all that we are, is not all that we are. We are not just this death-bound littleness. Here he is telling us that the body's tissues thrill apotheosized. Its cells sustain bright metamorphosis. This little being of time, this shadow soul. The ego is the shadow soul, the ego self. It gives us a feeling that I am, but it's the shadow cast by the soul on the life self. Sri Aurobindo in other places will speak of the double soul of man. Normally what we call as my soul is usually this self of desire, which is confused as one's own, one's soul. But one has to pass through it to discover the true soul. Sri Aurobindo is using a beautiful word, this shadow soul, this little being of time, this shadow soul, this living dwarf figurehead of darkened spirit, out of its traffic in petty dreams shall rise. Our dreams are very small. Our dreams are also like small happinesses, small sorrows, petty dreams. But we miss out on the great adventure, climbing to unseen heights, facing the dangerous abysses. These dreams don't come. We see small dreams and we are happy with that. And of course, even the waking dreams are very small. Out of its traffic in petty dreams shall rise its shape of person and its ego face, divested of this mortal travesty, like a clay troll kneaded into a god, new made in the image of the eternal guest. It shall be caught to the breast of a white force, and flaming with the paradisal touch in a rose fire of sweet spiritual grace, in the red passion of its infinite change, quiver, awake, and shudder with ecstasy. What a beautiful change Sri Aurobindo has foreseen. And what a pity that this little self still wants these little things. It's really some kind of a really a magic spell on us. That Sri Aurobindo is coming and telling us, look, this is what I have this in stock for you. That your every morning will be, this is, use a word, each day is a spiritual romance. We wake up and wake up with the thrill of that ecstasy. We sleep and we fall in the embrace of the divine. And throughout the day we experience that delight, that love which we seek but never find. So Sri Aurobindo is telling, this is what I have built for you, my little children, but this is the hold of the little life, like a magic spell. This too will be broken. Sri Aurobindo knows that human beings cannot free themselves from this hypnosis by their own limited efforts. This is the hypnosis. As if reversing a deformation's spell, released from the black magic of the night. Very often people say that, you know, all this spiritual thing, are you sure it is not some kind of hypnosis? So the answer is this. If anything, it is de-hypnotizing ourselves. We live as if hypnotized. And the hypnosis is that we are limited. The hypnosis is that we are small. The hypnosis is we are powerless. The hypnosis is that we just will be happy with these small things. The hypnosis is that we are ignorant. The hypnosis is that this appearance is the beginning and end of things. So this is because the black pall of night, the black magic of the inconscient base has cast a spell. What a beautiful language that we, it makes us believe. And even when we grow up, these things whisper into our ears. It keeps whispering, all that is fine, reading Savitri, everything is fine. Are you sure it is not a fiction, a poet's imagination? Real life is this, out here. Didn't you hear somebody met with an accident and died? Didn't you hear that this happened, that happened? Look at the state of affairs of the country. This darkness keeps whispering. And we lend more credence to it than to the word of light. So here is the word of light. Released from the black magic of the night, renouncing servitude to the dim abyss, it shall learn at last who lived within unseen, and seized with marvel in the adoring heart, to the enthroned child godhead kneel aware, trembling with beauty and delight and love. Today we are taught by the gospel of Hiranyakashyap, the gospel of the darkness, that look, all this is very fine, very good to read, nice poetry Sri Aurobindo has written, good philosophy, but don't follow this. If you have to go for a work, you have to go and kneel in front of the minister, you have to do this, you have to kneel in front of that, you have to pray to the little godheads. These deities of little life also have taken human shapes and they behave like that, as if your work will stop if they were not there. It does stop our outer work because they have this little power. Of course, they cannot stop the spirit journey, but they harass and hassle because this is their task and we get so much carried on by them. So Sri Aurobindo says, but when a day will come when we will discover who was he who sat unseen, and then before that presence, the child godhead, we will kneel and we'll be filled with beauty and delight and love. But then he tells us, yes, but there is something we have to do first. This promise, to fulfill this promise, something we have to do. But first the spirit's ascent we must achieve. Out of the chasm from which our nature rose, the soul must soar sovereign above the form. There are two snares, and we often jump one to the other. Death tells Savitri toward the end that you have escaped from both the snare. The snare of form and the snare of contempt for form. Now there are two different stages. Now, Sri Aurobindo says that this form is important and bodily life must be transformed. So, we cannot do it if we are holding on to form with our little ego and scared of, you know, death. The catch is that to be really arrive at the immortality, we must be free from the fear of death. This is the catch. If we are afraid of death, that, oh, now Sri Aurobindo has given us a nice yoga, now I will become immortal. This is not immortality of this little personality. And who cares about it? What difference does it make whether a particular formation becomes immortal or not? It's so small. It is that which spreads itself and makes everything immortal within us. So Sri Aurobindo is telling us the first step is that the soul must disengage itself and rise beyond the form. So first snare we must come out of is the snare of form. That the form is all. That's why elsewhere in Savitri, Sri Aurobindo tells us, this bodily appearance is not all. The form deceives, the person is a mask. Hid deep in us celestial powers dwell. Speaking of a spirit that is a flame of God abides, a fiery portion of the wonderful. So this is the first snare we have to avoid. Then, having come out of it, then we work on the form, not as slaves of the form, not out of fear, but as its master. We know that this is only a office, and we are working on it because that is the divine will, and not out of any fear or attachment. And if it has to be thrown aside, fair enough, there is no problem. So that is the state in which this yoga has to be done. So Sri Aurobindo is telling us, but first the spirit's ascent we must achieve out of the chasm from which our nature rose. The soul must soar sovereign above the form and climb to summits beyond mind's half sleep. Our hearts we must inform with heavenly strength, surprise the animal with the occult god. So here is the mystic symbol where we have the, in the Indian myths we have gods riding over the animal. All the gods have animals below their feet. So we have Ganesha riding over mouse, and we have Kartikeya, the war god, riding over peacock, and we have Indra riding over Aravat, we have Vishnu riding over Garuda, and we have Durga riding over lion. This is the image that must awaken in us, that inform our little hearts with heavenly strength and surprise the animal with the occult god. There is God within us, and that Godhead must ride over the animal and be its master. The image of the soul mastering nature, but it's most beautifully captured in Krishna's dance over Kaliya's serpent. It's a mastery over the subconscious forces of nature. This animal must become an instrument and vehicle for the occult god within us. Then kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice. Now the whole yoga is being summarized. That first we must free the soul from its attachment to the form. Then the animal parts in us must be conquered and made to submit to the soul. The whole Ramayana comes clear in a flash. The monkeys, the elephant, the bear, and even the bird, Jatayu, all these Gileri, that squirrel, all of them must submit to the embodied divine. And the Asura and Rakshasa be vanquished then. The animal parts in us must be informed by the occult god, become subservient. Then the dark pit, then we can march with that army. So long as animal nature is not conquered, it's idle to believe that we can really talk of transformation and immortality and supramentalization. First, this little god must step out and conquer. Then, kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, where all the lower and lesser parts are offered in a flame to the higher in us. Then, kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, calling the powers of a bright hemispheres, we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state. It's then that the sacrifice has a meaning. So long as we are a slave of our animal nature, we keep saying, Mother, come and, you know, transform us. This doesn't work like that. The soul must step out. Elsewhere, Sri Aurobindo would tell us, but for this high spiritual change to be, earth must transform itself and equal heaven. But for this high spiritual change to be, the heavenly psyche must put off her veil and step into common nature's crowded room. So this is the condition, that the soul must be free. Then when it kindles the sacrifice and turns all our little activities as a sacrifice to the above and the beyond, then we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state, make the abysm a road for heaven's descent. Then even when we are in the thick of darkness, we will make it a means for the heavenly light to be attracted. Acquaint our depths with the supernal day and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire. This is a line from the Rig Veda actually. Literally a line. Many of these lines are literally echoes from the Vedas. This darkness, this line, there is a hymn to Agni where the Rishi actually aspires for the fire to cleave the darkness, to tear it, because darkness is a mask. Therefore, one cleaves it. It's simply a mask, nothing else. And when this is cleaved, we discover that supernal day, supernal ray. Acquaint our depths with the supernal ray and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire. So this he has discovered. And then Ashupati crosses this little life kingdom. He has seen the Godheads, shown us, and then he will move on to a greater life. Now this is very interesting that Sri Aurobindo deals with all these planes of consciousness in three ways. One, when he is talking of the yoga of Ashupati, he is showing us these planes as they are in their universal consciousness. They are universal planes, and Sri Aurobindo will reveal these planes as they are in their universal consciousness and as they influence earth nature. So it's a wide universal vision. Next, when we read about the yoga of the Divine Mother, then she will reveal to us, because she has to give the yoga to man, how we experience the touch of these planes as we go in our own inner self-discovery, because we are not Ashupati and we cannot enter into that kind of a boundless vision. But we will encounter all these planes. So we have these planes of little and greater life which one experiences in the inner journey, and Savitri experiences them in the canto entry into the inner countries. And there we find the contact with this plane of life, the greater and the lesser life, and what face it presents to us. Then a third place where again he will show us these planes is when she fights with death, because in our individual journey we can travel through these planes, tell them that stay on, first let me find the soul, and then we invoke that presence. Then when Savitri struggles with death to reverse this deformation spell, because all these planes are a mix of something from above and something from below, that's what is the problem. So she will fight with death, and death will again and again take her, that look, this is my kingdom, you want to claim it? Look, I have slain everything and kept them here. We don't realize it, they are so living to us. And Savitri will say, I know, but look, I have also seen this happen. Again it will take further and further down till it will go, he will take Savitri right to the pit and ask her that, okay, you have all this knowledge, but where is the power in you? And then she will literally cleave the darkness with a light and fire. So this is the three places these planes will be dealt with. And then we come to this kind of a middle point, Canto 6, the kingdoms and godheads of the greater life. This greater life we can image in various ways. One image is today the sea. Very often we see it, at least there are two color shades we can see. One is which is muddy, and this muddy sea is something which is still touched by the mud and sand of the earth, and up to that point usually small boats can go, the big ships cannot sail on it. Human beings can swim, the little boats can go, but beyond it we see another color, the same sea becomes more powerful, ships can sail on it, human beings venturing into it is dangerous. Beyond a point, the mortals should not dare, because those seas can be dangerous. This part of the sea gives us small little nice pebbles and seashells, and you know, the little life is like that. We are happy with the little gifts that the sea gives us. But if we have to really adventure, if we really want the real pearls, if we really want to experience the sea, its boundlessness, then we have to adventure with the spirit of adventure, go out into that. And that is both dangerous and charming. It holds deep pearls and also dangerous sharks. And there is in us and in the universal consciousness a plane of life where we find this greater life, vaster life, a life which is not bound by this clay. It is still coming down from the heavens, and even though the darkness from below mixes with it, it still captured something of that image, carries that image and wants to recreate here. When Sri Aurobindo speaks of the kingdoms of the little life, he describes it as a fondling of heaven left at the gates of hell. This is how he describes, a very touching description, that this child, the little life, is actually its parentage is heaven, and it has lost its way and find itself on the gates of hell. But when he describes this greater life, he describes a child of heaven searching for his home. So this greater life is a greater awakening within us, where we for a moment forget our mortal state and dream or wish for things which perhaps are not on earth. And this greater life we visit in dream reveries, in fantasies, in wishes, in imagination, and sometimes we are born with it. There are beings who are born with this greater life, who carry this vision. So this is the greater life towards which helps us to come out of this mortal state. We are not always ready for this inner fire. So even in our littleness, the divine has provided a greater power which tries to inform this little life and lifts it out. And often it is our dreams which actually are a key to a greater life into the beyond. And it's again a pity that when little children are born, they are born with these dreams. But as they grow up, thanks to our education, they begin to lose these dreams. This whole thing we will see in this journey of Ashwapati. First, these little children are born with little life. So they just breathe, eat, and these little things. Then as they grow, they begin to dream. There are no myths for them. Everything is real. Hanuman can fly because he is real. The Superman is real. The Batman is real. Harry Potter is real. But as they grow, they are told, this is not real. This is a world of imagination and fantasy. True. In a sense, it is true. But this is an imagination which opens the door to the beyond, because it tries to replicate in our little mortal state something which is in its depth true. So this world of greater life is nothing but the creative vital, the power of the vital to create. All these forms that we see on earth, each form is different. No two leaves are same. There is a tremendous creative power in the vital, in life. It is not just about survival. If it was only about survival, amoeba is enough. It can survive ad infinitum. But how this greater life, through its creativity, has created so many forms? Because it's always trying to recreate infinity. And in human beings, this power manifests itself as imagination. Sri Aurobindo tells us that imagination in human nature is a degradation or a diminished version of the creative power of Maya, which is found on the peaks. But often this power also, like all other powers, is lent to misuse by the darkness. So we'll read a little bit of this canto. Canto 6, the kingdoms and godheads of the greater life. As one who between dim receding walls, towards the far gleam of a tunnel's mouth, hoping for light, walks now with freer pace. Ashwapati is coming out of that stifling zone, totally grey. He's coming out into a lesser grey and feels approach a breath of wider air. Those who come from this greater life, who have its touch, feel suffocated with the normal human life because they cannot find full possibility of expressing that which they carry within. So he escaped from that grey anarchy. Into an ineffectual world he came. It's very interesting. This world builds so many things, but all its images end up with approximations. At best, they are a guess of something real. At worst, they are a fabrications of the science of the real in ignorance. Into an ineffectual world he came, a purposeless region of arrested birth, where being from non-being fled and dared to live but had no strength long to abide. This is like where images come and go. It lacks the solid base of eternity. And this is the first vision. Shurabindu will tell us later on why even this world, how it serves a great purpose. But this is his first impression. As Ashwapati enters into this region, he sees nothing is sure. All comes and flees. It appears real and the next moment it becomes unreal. So Sri Aurobindo has such a beautiful description where being from non-being fled and dared. It comes close. It seems real. Even it can fabricate to us the divine mysteries. This world can create anything. A few lines below, line 17. After denial dawned a dubious hope. It gives some hope. In the little life you see no hope. Of course, unless one sees the soul within and the God above. But here there seems to be a hope. A hope of self and form and leave to live. And the birth of that which never yet could be. It's interesting. This world creates things which is not yet there. A classic example is Steven Spielberg's movie Cocoon. Before the supramental transformation can take place, he has already made a movie. I believe he came to Auroville and surely he must have read somewhere Sri Aurobindo. So this movie is about the new beings who come from some other planet. And they come and they are beings of light who are wearing a mortal cloak. And these beings are have all the beautiful qualities. They have compassion. They are full of that knowledge. They have power. They can heal by a touch. Very interesting movie, is worth seeing. Cocoon, part 1, part 2. Part 1 is good. And it's very interesting. This movie was released on 21st February. So it's, this movie has some touch. But it's an imagination. It's not what true transformation will be. But it's capturing the world mind. It gives a dubious hope. And Sri Aurobindo in the Life Divine towards the end, he says, one of the ways by which this yoga will work in the mind of the race is by capturing the collective imagination. So nowadays, we have these movies of human beings evolving into the species next. So this has already come and this is the plane which is behind it. Not some, we should not mistake it that, oh, this is where the yoga is being done. The transformation has already happened in Steven Spielberg's mind. No. He's a creative artist. And therefore, he's inspired by this plane of the greater life. All creative artists are inspired by this plane. And therefore, he has caught something of it and has put it on the screen. So, Sri Aurobindo is telling us, and the birth of that which never yet could be. And joy of the mind's hazard. The heart's choice, grace of the unknown, and touch of sudden surprise, and a touch of sure delight in unsure things. To a strange, uncertain tract his journey came, where consciousness played with unconscious self, and birth was an attempt or episode. A charm drew near that could not keep its spell, an eager power that could not find its way, a chance that chose a strange arithmetic. Now Sri Aurobindo is teasing us with a puzzle. We have all kinds of puzzle. This is a fantastic puzzle. A chance that chose a strange arithmetic. Here the arithmetic is 2 plus 2 is 1. In spiritual life, there is another arithmetic. Add anything, it is infinity and 1. But in this world, the arithmetic is very strange. What is the arithmetic? A chance that chose a strange arithmetic, but could not bind with it the forms it made. A multitude that could not guard its sum. Before you spell out the sum, it is changing. And what it is changing? Which less than zero grew and more than one. Actually, this is very interesting. We should not try to explain it because we should meditate on it. I have my own revelation about it. But it's worth just thinking about what is this strange arithmetic that things grow less than zero. Actually, when you look at, when you look at this world, it creates all kinds of things. It creates darkness and hell, it creates heaven and heights, it creates the divine. The divine is one and zero is the other extreme. But when this world creates things, it creates the zero which is less than zero and the one which is greater than one. It has its own way. So when it creates the omnipotence of God, based on which we have these ideas of omnipotence, God is omnipotence. He should be able to do everything and anything by a wand, because this is the impression created by this world. It is greater than one. It can do what God cannot do. Because of course the divine can do, but there are conditions of the play which he has himself entered. So all this it doesn't care about. It's a multitude which could not guard its sum. And its arithmetic is very strange. Even when it shows the darkness is deadlier than the actual darkness. Of course, that darkness is suffocating. But this is the way it works. Just a few lines more, then we take a break. Next page, 174. Okay, we'll read from line 36. Five lines below from the top. In worlds imagined, never yet made true. It's a world of imagination. And it's not only things from the heights which it picks up. This world of imagination picks things from anywhere, even what we imagine. It picks it up and makes a world. This is the beauty of this world. It picks up anything and everything. Every thought form becomes real there. So even our dead hopes, our wishes, our fantasy are real. And they begin to influence. That is why the mother says you should be very careful what you imagine. Because you are surrounded by these things. They are not just imagination. But of course, in one sense they are imagination. In world, these are real worlds of imagination. In worlds imagined, never yet made true, a lingering glimmer on creation's verge, one strayed and dreamed and never stopped to achieve. There are people, children or even grown up, who are caught in this world. And that's why it's very important not to shut oneself and isolate. Sri Aurobindo used to say this. Otherwise, one can sometimes get locked into these worlds. We'll talk about it after the break. To achieve would have destroyed that magic space. Actually, probably we should deal with it after the break, because each line is a marvel. The marvels of a twilight wonderland, full of a beauty, strangely, vainly made, a surge of fanciful realities, dim tokens of a splendor sealed above, evoke the passion of the eye's desire, compelled belief on the enamored thought, and drew the heart, but led it to no goal. The last two lines on this page, a will that unpersisting failed, worked there. Life was a search, but finding never came. There nothing satisfied, but all allured. Things seem to be that never wholly are. Images were seen that looked like living acts, and symbols hid the sense they claimed to show. Pale dreams grew real to the dreamer's eyes. The souls came there that vainly strive for birth, and spirits entrapped might wander through all time, yet never find the truth for which they live. All ran like hopes that hunt a lurking chance. Nothing was solid, nothing left complete. All was unsafe, miraculous, and half true. It seemed a realm of lives that had no base. We shall read it a little more and work with these lines after the break.